When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I absolutely loved it. It was just one of those films that just kicks you right in the face.
It's just beautiful. That's just absolutely beautiful. You don't get to see that often, if ever. And then the soundtrack on top of that.
You got Jay-Z, you got Kid Cudi, you got everybody.
It's just full of sass. Mm. That's the best way to really put it. It doesn't try and hide itself behind the conformities and constraints of typical white Westerns.
Not just one of the best female fights, but just one of the best fight scenes I've seen, hand-to-hand fight scenes I've seen since like John Wick.
It defies its genre completely. And it just does it with spectacular effect. It's just a hell of a ride.
Hello, film fans. Joining Flix Watcher in the studio today, we have Kelechi.
Hey, how's it going?
Katie.
Hello.
And Kobe.
Yo.
And we're here today to review The Harder They Fall. Thank you, as always, to the mighty people for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts, anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello everyone, welcome to Flix Watcher Podcast. Joining us remotely today, we have Kelechi and Katie. If you could please say hello, tell the listeners a little bit more about who you are, please.
Hi, my name's Katie Smith-Wong. I'm a freelance film critic based in London.
And my name is Kelechi Ahenyola, and I'm also a freelance film critic based in London as well, writer for Confessions of a Geek Mind, which is my blog, as well as several other outlets, which include Film Stories and Jump Cut Online.
You guys both write for Film Stories, don't you?
Yeah, we do.
Is that how you became friends, or?
We're mutual acquaintances, I think, is the best way to put it. But I think we're friends also because we feel that underrepresented female film critics need to have a bigger presence.
Yeah, that, and also Katie happened to be at a Captain Marvel press screening and was noting the fact that there was a lack of female critics in there. And I saw the tweet and retweeted it, and then it exploded.
Did you meet then after that? Was that
we were at a friend's party, and then we were like, oh snap, that's Kate. You're the girl that asked me to.
It was a very weird press screening, because essentially what happened was I was queuing with some friends who were also female film critics, and I was just looking at this queue, and it was a lot of Caucasian men, and it was just like, where's the representation, especially when it's a female led Marvel film. So I just took this picture, and I was like, okay, so there's a lack of diversity here. It's not just female attendees, but also people of color. And that was what we both collection now want to try and raise through film criticism.
That is fair enough. And obviously that's like the prime film in superherodom to have addressed that. And I know, like, speaking to other female film critics, like Helen O'Hara, for example, the amount of times she talks about being often the only female critic there, but then when it comes to a rom-com, there's suddenly all these women there. You're like, hold on, where have you been half the time? So I would have even thought that they'd have the foresight to get more women in a female lead, but no.
It's the same with being the only black critic in the room.
Or the only Asian critic.
Or the only Asian female critic in the room. And then suddenly, you know,
Like the farewell comes along.
You get Boxing Day, and then suddenly, yeah. Oh, I'm surrounded by my people. Okay.
So, you say that, but I did not see many Asian attendees in Shang-Chi and Ten Rings. It was a very, very
somber night. So maybe it's a Marvel thing.
I'm not going to say anything.
I'm not losing my Marvel credibility right now.
No.
Okay, yeah. Marvel, if you hear this, it's just Kobe speaking. Although if you want to send myself and Helen to Marvel stuff for free, you know, in the States or Atlanta or, you know, Wakanda, we'll go. Clitch, we're here talking about The Harder They Fall, which is your choice. Can you tell us, first of all, why you chose it? And I'll get the timer up and you can give us your synopsis in 60 seconds or less or fewer, which is grammatically correct.
So I chose The Harder They Fall because in just simple, plain terms, it's an awesome film. There's no sugarcoating it. It is an awesome kick-ass of a ride film. And it's a story that deals with trauma and revenge and how it shapes the lives of others and how they grow up to be. And it's about a young kid named Nat Love. And he witnesses the death of his parents at the hand of Rufus Buck, who's played by Idris Elba. And Idris Elba is out here doing pretty much a pre-Bond opening credit sequence with as the man with the golden guns. And with Nat Love being traumatized by that singular experience, he grows up, transforms into the beautiful Jonathan Majors, and he basically goes on a quest of revenge. And he forms a gang called the Nat Love Gang. And that's joined by Zazie Beetz, who plays Stagecoach Mary, and a whole load of other cast members. And they are going after the Rufus Buck Gang.
Katie, what are your thoughts?
I absolutely loved it. It was just one of those films that just kicks you right in the face with this great cold open and then those credits that just screams attention with this really awesome track. And it just sets the mood, sets the pace really, really well. And I was worried at the beginning that it was going to be one of Tarantino-esque kind of westerns. But when you see the cast, when you see the story was based on real people and the direction that it takes, it's just a hell of a ride. That's the best way that I can put it.
Do you think, I thought about Tarantino while I was watching this. I was like, I don't think Tarantino could do this. To be honest with you.
No.
Because Tarantino would just use the N-word every single, like, 30 seconds or something like that. Do you know what I mean? So,
and also, I don't think he's got the deftness of touch anymore that he would. It'd be bloated. It'd be a lot of fun. Maybe some dialogue would be tighter or more interesting. I don't know. But it just wouldn't be a fun thrill ride. Helen?
For a debut picture, it was very surprising, like, to have this as your debut film to come out right from the start. I don't think I was quite prepared for how violent it was. It's extremely violent. We should say that if you don't like violence, then this is probably not going to be for you. It's a very, very cool kind of slick feature. It looks amazing. It sounds amazing. There's so much going on. I'm not sure the story really got me, which I think is more to the fact that it's a Western kind of story and I'm traditionally not very much into Westerns, but there's some bits that I really love, like Regina King's apple peeling skills, little touches like that, that really kind of just kind of like made it and makes these characters, and they all have their little quirks. And it's just kind of the colours as well. Like, I've never seen the Wild West look that colourful, which I think for me was quite surprising, because Westerns tend to be kind of quite brown and drab, and you know, everyone's kind of wearing greys and browns, but there's so much kind of colour, everything that's kind of popping.
I'm with you. If someone says a new Western's coming out, I'm like, I mean, who's in it? And I've always been, I tend to be surprised when, with recent Westerns, you know, Slow West, for example, I really, really enjoyed that as a recent Western. There's a scene with Zazie Beetz and Regina King where they have just, not just one of the best female fights, but just one of the best fight scenes I've seen, hand-to-hand fight scenes I've seen since, like, John Wick. It's like set in a dye factory where they're dyeing cloths, and it's just the imagination. It's just beautiful, just absolutely beautiful. You don't get to see that often, if ever.
Yeah.
And I thought that was just amazing. And then the soundtrack on top of that, again, not a typical Western soundtrack. You don't have the kind of noodling, whatever nonsense.
Ennio Morricone type of.
Yeah, as much as it's awesome.
Fela Kuti. You got Jay-Z, you got Kid Cudi, you got everybody.
It's just full of sass. Mm. That's the best way to really put it. It doesn't try and hide itself behind the conformities and constraints of typical white Westerns. It was something, director James Samuel, he just wanted to kind of deliver this groundbreaking film in a genre that defies its genre completely. And it just does it with to a spectacular effect.
Yeah. The fact that it is based on real life people and James Samuel is able to craft a story based around all those real life people and basically tell a story about how representation and history matters.
Yeah.
And that's something that's really connected with me, because when you think about the traditional Westerns, you think about, you know, the John Ford, like Stagecoach, or even like John Wayne films, mm-hmm. and you think about how blackness, or even in a broader spectrum, people of color, and how they are systematically erased from those stories, as in to the point where you...
Or maligned in them. Like
maligned, yeah. There's always a feeling that you don't belong. And even though you're watching hit stories about good versus evil and cowboys versus Indians, the fact that you don't see yourself is where you don't feel like you don't have a story to tell.
Mm.
And when you've got something like this, like The Harder They Fall, you have a story that just basically says, no, we existed. We were real. We were there. We were part of this journey. And the way it does it, and we talk about, you know, Quentin Tarantino but it's not even a Quentin Tarantino, it's a James Samuel film.
Absolutely.
It takes the aesthetics of a Tarantino film, but makes it better. And he has fun with it. Mm. It's like a blaxploitation flair, but with a conscious and a nuance to everything that it does. And, you know, Helen, you're talking about the story. I think it's absolutely fantastic in this story, because how many times have we seen with stories and black stories in particular, where we don't necessarily get a respite from the triggers and traumas that deals with slavery and other things that deal with it. Yeah, torture, slavery, any of those things that are stories that have been told time and time again, but have not found a new context or a new way of re-examining the argument. And I point out to things like Antebellum and even something like Amazon Prime's Them. Here's a story that is basically about blackness, how blackness is not a monolith, and how it looks at cultures and communities, and how it's about the family that you make. And that's expressed between the two gangs. And that's how you get the humor, the jokes, the drama, and everything else that comes along with it.
And it's also about how women were not just seen as these objects of desire. They have a strength to them. They were not cowering in the background. They were there side by side next to the people who are defending themselves, fighting against them. That's why I think the fight between Zadie Beetz and Regina King was just so full of power. It was unrestrained. They didn't hold anything back. And that's what you kind of want in female characters, especially in the Western, when men's supposed to take charge. No, this was the women standing their own ground, showing that they can hit as hard as the men can.
Yeah.
Take a minute to think about the cast, but when we talk about the cast, I could talk for hours and days and years and infinity. But I'm just going to pick out a few people. I'm going to go quickly because, again, there's a lot of them. Jonathan Majors, fucking hell. RJ Seiler, who I first saw Mean Earl and the Dying Girl, who I loved then. Zazie Beetz, Reggie King, Lakeith Stanfield. Oh my God. Dion Cole, who's a comedian who I really, really like at the moment. Idris Elba. Good Lordy. Anyone. Delroy Lindo. So before this, the only character I knew from this was Bass Reeves, who's Delroy Lindo's character. And that's from watching The Watchmen. So he was the only character I knew before then. But, you know, I was so eager to like check out Cherokee Bill whilst watching the film. I was like, no, wait until the film's finished. And then I can do my Wikipedia check. But guys, this cast list, and I've just picked on a small subset of this, but this is insane, right?
Yes.
It's black excellence in a roll call. That's simplified. But that just shows you, I mean, that like the power and belief behind the concept and how much they jumped onto it. I mean, Katie and I had the lucky, you know, the privilege of attending the LFF press conference for The Harder They Fall. And you can see how much this film meant to everybody on the cast, and particularly for James Samuel. And you can, when you hear James Samuel talk, you can almost listen to him for days because he is so knowledgeable, but also so witty and funny. And how he described the project, how he, you know, he wanted to do something that was about a Western, and he knows a Westerns is a very niche, but it's also come from his own childhood and how he connected with Westerns. And to bring that to life and to fruition, he got Idris on board, he got Regina King, and Jonathan Majors was probably like, I think, the last piece of that puzzle. That in itself shows you that they all passionately believed in this story and to tell it in the most authentic way it can be, whilst having a brilliant time doing it. And you can see that from the on-screen performances. You can see it whenever Lakeith is so cool, but at the same time is completely deadly and violent. You can feel it in CJ Siler's humor, you know, I'm lightning with the blam blams, you know, and him playing tricks. And also, like as Katie mentioned, with the female characters, they are if it's not Nat Love, you know, the characters in Nat Love and Rufus Buck, you know, being the main central storyline, the women are the MVPs of this film.
Cuffy too.
Regina King. Cuffy as well. Regina King is my MVP because she's my queen. Mm-hmm. But Cuffy, but Danielle Deadwyler as Cuffy, and, you know, pretending to be a boy, dressing up as well, and playing into that man as well, but still keeping that essence that I can still compete with everybody and I don't care who I am.
Well, she's the bouncer in the club and everyone.
Like, you know, knuckle dusters, everything, and she holds her own. And her introduction in that scene is amazing because it's saying, I'm not taking any shit from you. Respect me. If you got any problem, take your business outside in the street. I don't care. But if you're going to come and cause trouble, you're going to get a fistful of dollars in my fist. and that shows you, like, that is very, for me, very empowering to see that as characters, especially for the female characters. As Katie said, it's not about watching characters who are subservient, they're not maids. These are people who are equal to the people that are on screen. You know, there's a brilliant moment between Regina King and Idris Elba, which I found out was actually improvised. And it's a show of solidarity. And they bow their heads towards each other when Rufus Buck is released from his cage cell.
Yeah, okay.
And that shows a sign of respect, that you are my equal, we are family. And that shows you the level of, like, there's no kind of hierarchy, there's no kind of, you know, I'm better than you or anything like that. It's like, what we're doing this together. And that in itself is one of the essence of why it makes it so brilliant.
Katie or Helen, is any members of that cast who you hadn't seen before, or any members of the cast that stuck out to you this time round, or you were looking forward to particularly seeing?
I think all the cast they just surprised me because they just raised the bar to this amazing, to such a great level that all of them almost play along on the same kind of caliber. Mm-hmm. But you know, Regina King I've always been a big fan of hers ever since I watched her in Ray. So seeing her play this kick-ass character, especially after her directorial debut, One Night in Miami. So to see her back on the screen, it was just it was a comfort to see her in such a great role.
My fan of Regina King went back to like Boys in the Hood.
I was thinking that, even though she's only in it for seconds, but then every time you see her again, there's something about her, right? I was thinking like actors with like amazing eyes, and she's definitely one of them.
Especially also, I just remembered in what was it?
Jerry Maguire?
No, Bill Street. That was where she won the Oscar. So that just kind of, every time she's on the screen, it's so brilliant.
It's class, and she's so multi-talented. She can do anything. Like you know, after Bill Street, you had Watchmen, the HBO TV series.
One of the best things ever.
One of the best things ever in terms of talking about comic book legacy and, you know, Black culture and how it's been raised out of that. And she's just been on a high, you know, she was always great, but she's been on this road where it's literally, she's transformed into one of the most elite stars ever. Like She is amazing at what she does.
Helen, anyone from yourself that you were excited to see or hadn't heard of before, that you're like, damn, I need to know more about them in the future?
We've kind of already said like loads about Regina King. I think it's great. And Westerns, I'm not, don't really know that many Westerns, but I certainly can't think of any Westerns with strong female characters. And she kicks a lot of ass. That's great. And Lakeith, like, always a pleasure to see him. And Delroy Lindo, which when I was watching this, I was kind of reminded of The Five Bloods and his performance in that. And then if you kind of watch this as a companion piece, like
Jonathan Majors there as well.
He's mm-hmm. just, yeah, it's just great to see. And even Idris as well, who is, how old is he now? Is he?
It is 50s.
50s? So yeah. you've got like a main character, big star in their 50s in a film that's modern and relevant, which is really great to see. Not very often we kind of get these ensemble casts to come along, but yeah. And then there was I'd never seen Stagecoach Mary before, with kind of like rocking a slash wig. I don't know, with the top hat and
I was thinking slash.
Slash wig.
November Rain solo in any second.
Was it? Because there's church in there as well. I was kind of like wondering, yeah, you know, is she going to get a guitar out and rock a guitar? So plenty of newcomers for me. So yeah, but Delroy Lindo for me was probably a nice surprise. He kind of comes along and he's like, his role in it is almost like that kind of friendly face, and you're like, oh yeah, he's the good guy. Like, we're on his side. We want to be on his side.
Yeah, I think Lakeith for me and Jonathan Majors. Jonathan Majors, when I first saw him in The Five Bloods, I was like, he's this annoying guy. And then like everything I've seen him in, I'm like, fucking hell, he's brilliant, isn't he?
Like the amazing last, in Lovecraft, amazing, yeah, in The Last Black Man in San Francisco, amazing, which is when I first saw him.
Amazing in the last episode of Loki, monologuing alongside Tom Hiddleston and well, the two Lokis, as you say. And I was just like, yeah, well, this guy, he's on the up and up. So yeah,
he was also in the most recent Lovecraft drama.
Yeah, that's what yeah. Kalichi said. Yeah, Lovecraft Country. Yeah.
So yeah. I haven't seen that.
Please, watch it.
Everyone's nodding like highly recommended.
I do recommend it. If you, it's another one, it's a bit like The Holiday Fall in terms of how it remixes a genre. So you have a TV series that basically says, imagine, you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark, but we replace every Bundy with black characters. Imagine a haunted house scenario and replace it with black characters. So every episode is almost a commentary on how blackness has been erased out of popular culture, but also is telling this very mystical Lovecraftian journey that involves family and history and legacy.
Yeah. Sounds more up my street than Westerns.
Now TV. I think it's back on Now TV again.
I think so.
Is there anything else you guys want to say before we head to the scores?
Spoiler, but potential sequel, do we think?
Or because
it was teased, so
it's a tease. Mm. I feel like they should just leave that.
I kind of like it
as it is. I think I'm not saying it like James can't top what he did, but I think there's something. I think there's a tendency with sequels, like they just make it for the sake of making it and not kind of having an actual thought through and plan. That's not to say that's with The Harder They Fall, but I like the fact that it's almost self-contained and the fact that my girl Regina King gets to live. So in my own head canon, I can imagine what that potential sequel could look like, but I don't necessarily need to see it because the film in itself is awesome in itself.
One thing I wanted to say was just James Samuels. I became aware of him because I was a big fan of The Bullets and his music. And I was like, this today minus 30 days when I realized he was actually Seal's brother, but I didn't know that at all, even though I really loved his music. And and he was like someone who I heard the first song one well, the first song I heard of his, and like a year later or 2 years later the album came out. I was like, dude, what have you been doing? And I realized the album and then disappeared. This was like 2013, so I just thought he was one of those people who kind of did good music, but then, hey, you know, it didn't work out, and then suddenly comes out with this badass film. I'm like, what? So I'm looking forward to it. I haven't listened to the soundtrack in isolation. I'm looking forward to doing so because I know his musical library and I think it's better than Seal, to be honest, from my point of view.
dare you dish on seal.
Well,
kiss from a rose, goddammit.
You did kiss from a rose, which is fine. Which is fine.
It's an awesome track. Dare you, Kobe.
But yeah, I mean, Helen said, you know, directorial debut, which is, it annoys me when people come out with the skilled in different areas. So yeah, fair play to him. Look forward to seeing more from him. I'm sure Hollywood will be calling, especially if he can ensemble Idris Elba to Zazie Beetz in the same film. You know, they are taking notice of this guy 100%. Should we head to the scores?
Let's head over to the scores.
Hello, I'm Kate Lever, host of Who's a Good Dog, the podcast for anyone who's ever loved a dog. We're one of the other podcasts in the Stripped Media family. Each episode, I ask a brilliant person to introduce me to their dog and tell me how having a dog has changed their life. Listen to Who's a Good Dog wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Flix Watcher scores. All of the scores are out of 5. You may have decimal places if you wish, and we will start with you, please, Kelechi, with your recommendability.
It's too bad this is out of 5. Old as I said, 11. It's going to get a straight up 5 for me. If you want to see yourself on screen as a black person, watch this film. The confidence from Jane Samuel, the visual aesthetics, It feels everything that you would expect from a Western. And then you're seeing that in the most stylish of way. And as I mentioned before, without the N word ever mentioned, that is a refreshing way of looking at a genre and basing it on real life, with real life characters, and has that relatability involved. That in itself gives it the 5-star that it deserves.
Katie?
I agree with Kelechi. It's 5 for me. It's just so watchable and it's so much fun. Yes, it is violent, but if you like violence then in a Western, then totally recommend it.
Helen?
I'm going to go a little bit lower, mainly for the Western genre and also the violence as well. I think some people...
Breaking my heart, Helen.
I really struggled with some. I think
it was tough. It was tough.
I think the thing for me was that I really enjoyed it once Stagecoach Mary had kind of entered into their territory, and then it kind of became more of the kind of like the catty and mousy. But the build up to that was a bit too westerny for me. But once they kind of got into the fighting and the action, even if it was a bit violent, and once they busted him out of jail, so that was it. So I think also the bits where Idris isn't in it, I felt that maybe he could have been in it more. To be honest, I probably would not have watched this unless you'd picked it, just because it's a Western. And that is enough, I think, for some people to go, I'm not interested. So I would say that even if, like me, you're not really into Westerns, there's other things that are in it that you can probably enjoy, providing you like lots of violence. So there's kind of like a little bit of a caveat. But I was surprised that I enjoyed it as much as I did, considering it's a Western. And that is just how I feel about Westerns. Sorry.
So what's that mean as a score?
4.5.
I'm going to go for 4.9. It takes 0.1 off because of the violence in there. I think some people will be seriously put off by that, but anything else I think is like straight out, go for it. And I think the bit that made me think of Tarantino most was because of the violence, and in particular when Jonathan Majors shot that guy in the church and with one bullet went flying in the air, and then with like 5 other bullets took him out whilst he was like midair, which kind of reminded me of a scene in what was that slave film he did?
Django Unchained,
where he shot Christoph Waltz's character and he went flying back like that. That kind of hyper realized violence, and that's when I was like, oh, it's taking a bit from Tarantino here. But yeah, apart from that, yeah, loved it. So 4.9.
I think for me it was the guy with the gold teeth.
That was tough.
Oh, Wiley. Oh yeah.
Repeat viewing score, Kelechi.
4.8. And I mean, I could go higher, but I would say 4.8.
Well, you can go higher. You can go up to 5.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's go 5. Because it is a kick-ass ride. It's, for me, it's not something that you see too often. I mean, I get what you're saying, Helen, in terms of it's a Western, and that in itself puts people off because it's not really for everyone in that respect. But I think it's one of those films where if you take that leap of faith, you'll be pleasantly surprised by what you get out of it. It was, without a shadow of a doubt, my favorite film of London Film Festival. The amount of humor, the amount of swagger, the amount of confidence, the music, Regina King. What more can you not, what more can I not say about this film? It is absolutely genius in what it does. And I've found myself, you know, I've already watched it 3 times since it came out on Netflix.
Oh yeah, that's a straight up 5 then. I don't know where
it's 4.
I thought I was going 4.8 just because I was thinking of everybody else in terms of being a Western. But if I'm going by myself, of course I'm going by myself. I'm going by myself.
Katie.
I think I might, I'm just thinking, because I've only watched it once since watching it at London Film Festival.
So you've watched it twice then?
Yes. No, as a repeat viewing, I've only watched it once compared to Kelechi's 3 times. So I'm just thinking. So I probably, you know what, I'll probably go for a 5 as well, because not only is it stylish and stuff, but also has the violence that I can actually enjoy, but also the comedy. I think we should also mention its comedic elements, like for instance the raid they do in the white town, which is absolutely hilarious.
Yeah. White sand, white buildings.
I remember watching this particular scene. I was looking at it. I was like, holy crap. And then the cue card came up. It's a white town. I was like, okay. Yeah. So it's like, they actually went there. And that takes serious balls. But that's the kind of comedy timing and the visuals that I also want to go back for, because there's not many films go there with such gusto. So, totally 5.
Helen?
Not as high. 2 hours 19, so you've got to give a lot of time for this. 3.5. It's not one I'm going to immediately watch, but never say never. But I would be very interested to see what the director does next and where he's going to go from that.
Yeah, I thought it was a bit long. I didn't feel the time, but I think the length of time might make me think twice before pressing play again. And something that's, there's a lot of characters in it, which I loved, but also is like, I could have done more time with Lakeith, could have done time more, you know, with any of them together. And this is a problem I had with like Eternals as well. I was like, I really like this, but one more time with Barry Keoghan,
more backstory,
for example.
Yeah. To find out a bit more about how they got to where they are.
Yeah, exactly. It would have been, so I don't, maybe I want even longer film, but it wasn't.
Are you hinting at a prequel?
That's what's going to happen. That's what it's going to be. So I'm definitely going to watch it again. I'm not going to show how often, but let's go 4.5 here. But before we get to the small screen score, I just wanted, everyone's mentioned the Western. I know Helen's not a fan of the Westerns. Where are you, Kelechi and Katie, on Westerns in general? Is that, or do you have another genre which kind of just like makes you sigh or puts you off immediately?
When you think about Westerns, they're all, until recently, all followed a very formulaic plot. You have the same kind of gruff characters, male characters, and it just feels like, could someone do something different? But then, you know, you get to the late 90s when you had Sam Raimi do Quick and the Dead. There is something different there.
Well, and the Sharon Stone as a lead.
Yes, exactly. No, but it was not, you know, it wasn't like Clint Eastwood in a poncho or whatever it was. And you just want something different. And I think because the Westerns have, in my eyes, been this old-time, old-fashioned film genre, not many modern audiences would naturally gravitate towards it unless there's something that will appeal to them. And that's why I thought The Heart of Day Fall speaks to so many audiences, not for those who just like Westerns, but those who can, like you said, can identify themselves and the characters. So I think it just depends on what direction filmmakers want to take when it comes to certain genres.
What about yourself, Kelechi? Is there any genre that you don't like particular, or is there, what are your thoughts on Westerns?
I mean, my opinion on Westerns, I think it's always a very niche subject. I think Kay hit the nail on the head in terms of whether it has its appeal and what the direction and tone with it. My earliest memories of Westerns were with Clint Eastwood in, you know, The Fistful of Dollars, and anything that's, you know, scored by Ennio Morricone, for example. Mm. So that was always in the background, but it was never my sole interest. So it was always my least favorite. You know, my favorite genre of watching is science fiction, because I love, you know, the different worlds, the different stories. And I also think science fiction is probably the most flexible genre, because it can be on one scale of the spectrum very fun and engaging. So you get your Star Wars, your Guardians of the Galaxy, and then on the other side of it, you get your deep philosophical, you know, existential crisis films, you know, like your Blade Runners, your Space, 2001 A Space Odyssey, for example. So Westerns never really appealed to me, but you have to do something very interesting for it to be there on my watch list.
Yeah.
And I think that's what James Samuel did. He made this, not only, you know, as I mentioned before, about making it sure it's based on historical characters and bringing them to life and bringing in some elements, their story to life, but he also makes a very empowering film out of it that resonated so much with me that it got me, when I saw the film, I wanted to go out and buy a cowboy hat.
I wanted to get the bowler hat that Reggie King had.
Yeah, I just wanted to get a cowboy hat. I wanted to find the nearest horse and just ride off into the sunset. That's basically how, but that's the imagery you have. And I think when you look at representation, when you see yourself and you feel the vibe from it, you see yourself and you connect with those characters, the power of the imagination of what you can be expands. And that for me is how I want to see films for the next millennia. I just want films that are about empowering cultures and seeing people in different lights. And that's what's really good about this film.
I think for me, Westerns, it seems everyone here is like, I mean, Western? And there has to be a reason to watch that. Like Quentin Tarantino makes a Western. James Cameron makes an all-black Western. And for me, I'm always like bummed out that Back to the Future 3 is Western based. I'm like, oh, really?
They should have gone into space.
Yeah, they could have. I'm like, oh, okay, sure. Well, I mean, I'll watch it, of course, because it's Back to the Future 3, but I'm still, still bums me out a bit as a Western. So it's interesting. Maybe it's just our, you know, our generation being, you know, not raised in it, or feeling that it's like a great era of history that not really recognize or care about. But hey, there we go. Anyway, small screen score. I suspect this will be low than the previous scores, but let's go to Kelechi first, your small screen score.
I'm going to go with 3.8. Seeing it on the big screen with the music, cinematography, and just what James Samuel does in this direction, it fills the big screen. If you are familiar with a lot of Westerns, you'll see the familiar Western tropes and, you know, the vistas, the mountains, and even just how it stages it and how it also plays with those tropes as well. You know, there's one scene where Idris Elba, when he's released from his cage cell, he takes a breath and the screen fills up. And those kind of playful nuances, I think they play really well in a big screen. When you see it on a small screen, it's not to say you won't get the same experience, but I think it lose a little bit of those touches, but you still get the same playfulness. They're still there. The touches are still there. It's just a different circumstance in a different environment.
Oh, so what was yours? 3.5?
3.8.
Sorry, Katie.
I'm going to go around 3.75. I didn't have a problem watching it on a smaller screen. You could, the colours popped a bit better on a smaller screen, especially when you're a little closer. But yeah, I agree. You don't feel the same effect, the same emotional resonance with the landscapes and the vastness of the picture as if you were watching it at the cinema.
Helen.
So I, this is another one. It feels like it's come onto Netflix quite quickly. And again, this perhaps maybe had quite a short cinema release. So I don't recall seeing it at the cinema. It feels like there's so much going on in terms of the colour and the sound that it feels a little bit constricted on a TV. But that said, I wouldn't have seen it had it not been on Netflix, because I would have gone, Western, not going to do that. So I'm going to give it a 4, because this is your opportunity to not be me and to take a chance on it. And you've got no excuse, because all you need to do is press a button.
So Katie and Clutch, Helen and I have a friend who doesn't watch animation. And that's still, every time I hear it, I'm like, I can kind of understand, like, we're in the same way. He loves a Western, actually, doesn't he, Will? He loves a Western.
Yeah, he watches
But I'm just like, two of my favourite films of the past 10 years, like Kubo and the Two Strings and Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, are like both animations. I'm just like, and you're not going to see Inside Out either? What's the matter with you, boy?
It's like he's missed like 10 years of Pixar magic. Like,
all their films.
That's all their films. Like, what about Studio Ghibli films? Right. Like, come on now.
It's Studio Ghibli.
Was it? Studio Ghibli.
Chizu as well.
Oh, yeah, Chizu. Yeah.
But there's even like adult animations as well. So this is not like children's animations. It's anything animated.
Cartoon Saloon.
Yeah.
Wolfwalkers. Yeah. Oh my God, your friend's missing out. I feel sorry for
him. So maybe he feels the same way about us with Westerns. Maybe he's thinking, Unforgiven. All the John Wayne films, these poor idiots on this podcast right now, they don't... So small screen score.
Sounds like my dad. How did you know my dad?
Just check, it comes to our film quiz every month. You don't know that. Every Tuesday, like no. Once a month on a Tuesday, come to Soho to join our film quiz. Small screen score. I was like, I want to watch this. I want to watch this in the cinema. And you know, when Fela Kuti came on as well, it's like, fucking hell, I should see this in the big screen somehow. So I'm going to give it for a 3, because I wanted to see this in the big screen, at least, and I need to see it at least once in my life. Kelechi, engagement score.
I'm going to go 4.5. Again, as for reasons I've said before, in terms of story, in terms of how James Samuel keeps the energy just vibrant, the colors, the cast, everybody is on their A game. And when you're telling that type of story and with the confidence and the swagger, it just makes a lot of empowering sense in that respect. So in terms of the engagement, it ranks high. So 4.5.
Katie.
I think I'd have to give it the same score, 4.5. I mean, it's like if the opening didn't grab your attention, then there's a consistency, there's a tone, and yeah, like Kelechi said, an energy that just drives the film, that sees it from sequence to set piece to turning points whatsoever until that last fight scene, that pivotal fight scene. It's just relentless. It's ongoing. And it's just enthralling throughout.
Helen.
There's a lot of characters in here, so you have to be pretty engaged to kind of work, remember who's who and what their kind of like thing is. So I'm also going to give it 4.5. But also, for me, it was a bit like, oh, I've seen this person. What have I seen them in? What film it was in? Well, I'll do a little bit check. Oh, yeah, it was that film. They were good in that. I like that. But who's this person? I haven't seen them before. I have to have a little check. So that's why I can't give it higher than 4.5, because it did not. A little bit of IMDb-ing going on. IMDb also. I've seen them before. They were good in that.
Dion Cole, he's got a few stand-ups on Netflix. Check him out. He's one of my favourite people I've discovered in the past couple of years. And I discovered him.
you put him on the map, Kobe.
Christopher Columbus.
James Samuels, you should get this guy Dion Cole. Put him in the film. But yeah, let's go for 4.5 engagement score for myself. And that gives us an overall score of 4.37188. Again, small screen score here lets us down a bit. Otherwise, that would have been a touch higher. Everyone listening, do follow us on Twitter. We are at FlixWatcher Podcast. And one of the main reasons to follow us is because we tweet ahead of recording our episodes. So in this case, we put a tweet out saying we're reviewing The Harder They Fall with Katie Smith-Wong and Ke Enelu. That's how I say your Twitter accounts. Sorry, Kate. Have you seen it? Tell us your thoughts and a score out of 5 stars for an on-air shout-out. And we got one response. And I think that's mainly because it's a brand new film. But Kelechi, do you want to shout out the response?
So this response came from Invasion of the Remake. And he says, I, Sam, thought it was about 3.5. Great acting and cast. Great story. Okay, execution.
I don't know what he wanted more from the execution.
Yeah, I think execution was, everything was executed.
Splendidly.
Excellently.
Yeah.
Excellent execution. Yeah. Clutch and Katie, can you sign off by letting us know where we can find you online? And we'll say goodbye to all of our listeners.
So you can find me at Katie Henulo on Twitter. And if you want to follow my blog, it is at Geek Mind UK. And that is available on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
And you can find me at Katie Smith Wong on Twitter. And you can find my bylines on Flickfeast, Movie Market, Godzilla, and New Scientist.
Awesome. Thank you so much, guys. It's been a pleasure talking about The Harder They Fall.
Thanks,
you.
Pleasure,
guys.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K, Wood Audio. Tell him FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.